Well, greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on another popular lie when we come back. You know, during World War II, our parents and grandparents planted victory gardens, and they helped to provide their own food and fiber for themselves and for our country. Today, over half the food we eat is imported from outside of our borders, and our food is produced from hybrid seed that will not reproduce, and it's nutritionally deficient. Well, Adolf Steinbaum of Fairbanks, Iowa, put the matter into perspective by having samples of corn tested for nutrients that are usually added to commercial feeds. And when they were compared to more than 4,000 samples of hybrid corn tested in 10 Midwest states, Steinbaum's open-pollinated corn contained 75% more crude protein, 875% more copper, 345% more iron, 205% more manganese, and the same result has also been seen in the content of calcium, sodium, magnesium, and zinc. And in the opinion of many ecologic farmers, these hybrid seeds merely mask poor farming practices by producing bins and bushels of foodless food without the nutrients that are really food's reason for being in the first place. Now, if you'd like to know more about this multinational corporate monopoly of our seed and food supplies and how you can become independent from them, why don't you call and order our free General Law CD package? That's a four-hour commentary on the law in general, and it's educational, and it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free of charge, and you can call and order one right now. The number to call is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email and send us an email request for that free General Law CD package. Now, once more, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about popular lies in the media, popular lies in our schools, in our government institutions. We believe them. It's kind of like Santa Claus. You know, you believed in Santa Claus until one day you woke up and said, oh, wait a minute, that guy can't fit down our chimney. That doesn't make any sense, you know, when your brain starts to function. And we take a look at these lies. They're popular because we hear them over and over again. I think it was Adolf Hitler that made the observation. If you tell a lie often enough, over and over, people get used to it, and then they believe it. And they believe it in mass. And so I thought we'd take a look at some here, you know, like cancer, you know, the war on cancer. And Moses was real popular back there in the olden days. And if you don't believe what your church is teaching, you're going to go to hell, you know, and burn up for all of eternity. And voting cures all ills. These are some popular myths that we've exposed or explored. Let's take a look here at prison. The other day I was reading USA Today, and there was an article in there about Guantanamo. President Obama is going to close the Guantanamo prison with all of these, where all of these detainees, they call them. They're not convicted prisoners, they call them detainees, terrorists, detainees. And they're going to spend, or they're proposing to spend, they're asking for $84 million to close the prison. And I looked at that number and I said, $84 million to close the prison. Let me ask some of you people out there that have been foreclosed on in your homes. How much money did you have to spend to close your home and move out of it once it was foreclosed on? Once the word came down that you had to move, you had to leave, you had to get out, how much did it cost to close it down? Now, I could understand spending $84 million if the president said, we have to move these prisoners out of Guantanamo, and we got to move them someplace else, and we got to build a new prison, and it's going to cost us $84 million to build a new prison. And I got to thinking about that, and I said, well, does this article then tell us that it's going to cost $84 million to close Guantanamo, or it's going to cost $84 million to move the prisoners out of Guantanamo? See? Big difference there. But there was a separate article in the same paper, and it had to do with a place called Hardin, Montana. Now, up in Hardin, Montana, they've already built a maximum security prison up there that houses 600 people. And the Montana authorities, or at least the people around Hardin, Montana, sent a letter off to the Justice Department or somebody, and they said, look, send those 600 prisoners down to Guantanamo up here because we've got a brand new prison that's empty, and it's filled with razor wire and solitary confinement cells, and by golly, we could stand the money. We'd like to have that $84 million that the government's proposing to spend over here. We'd like you to spend it right here in Hardin, Montana. And then Senator Dick Durbin was on TV the other day, and Dick Durbin, you know, he's from Illinois, And he said, not in my backyard. And there's this great brouhaha going on in Washington about what are we going to do with these prisoners over here in Guantanamo? Like, you know, this is a god-awful problem. We just don't know how to solve it. And the president weighed in on it. He said, well, we got to close Guantanamo, but we don't know where to move the prisoners. And so the congressmen are saying, and there's a bunch of them, too. I mean, they're not just from Durbin, you know, in Illinois, but there's a bunch of these senators, you know, that are saying, okay, well, we don't want those prisoners moved into the continental United States. And we don't want those prisoners in our state. Kind of reminds me of Nevada. They said, hey, we don't want that nuclear waste here in our state. We want you to store it in downtown Brooklyn or someplace. But my God, don't put it out here in the wilderness of Nevada. So I'm just kind of like you, you know, I'm just reading the papers. And so Will Rogers said, all I know is what I see in the papers. And I was wondering, you know, what in the hell is going on here? Have we taken total leave of our senses, for crying out loud? Let's take a look at this idea. What's wrong with bringing the prisoners from Guantanamo into a prison here in the United States? Well, we don't want these terrorists in within our borders. Let me ask you this. We lock up murderers and violent criminals in prisons inside the United States every day now, don't we? We had a guy here named Ted Bundy. He killed 27 people. He was a serial killer. Did we say, my God, this guy is so dangerous and our prisons are so lax and so easy to escape from that we have to store him in Guantanamo? I don't think so. I think they just locked him up down there in Florida and he never got away. We had a guy named Al Capone one time lock him up in Alcatraz. We've got prisons here in the United States called maximum security prisons, like Joliet, Illinois. Let me ask you this, Senator Durbin. Do you honest to God believe that if you took those prisoners from Guantanamo and locked them up in Joliet, that they're going to escape from the Joliet prison and then start running around the streets of Chicago, terrorizing the people? Is that what? Hey, come on. Are you people serious? Have you people got your head screwed on straight? So it wasn't just Durbin, though. It was several other senators, especially some women. There was a woman, I think, Cade Bailey Hutchison, maybe from Texas, and then there was one or two from Maine. You know, they got a couple of them up there in Maine, you know, a couple of dingbat women over here. I guess they were figuring that these prisoners were going to escape, you know, and they're going to terrorize us all. And so my God, I think it was Dianne Feinstein said, we don't want them in California, if I remember right. Now, the people up in Hardin, Montana, want them. They said, hey, send them up here. Now, why is that? Well, because these prisons produce a payroll. You know, if you got 500 or 600 men locked up in jail, you know, you got to have 100 or 200 guards, don't you? You got to have food to feed the prisoners, and you got to have barbers to cut their hair, and you got to have the families of the guards and the prison staff, and then there's got to be maintenance on the prison and the groundskeepers. And, you know, there's all this work, and so around America for years now there have been fights, kind of like food fights, from various communities trying to get their state legislatures to build a prison in their community because it means money, it means jobs, it means payrolls. It's an anchor industry. I call it the law enforcement growth industry. We have 2 million prisoners here in the United States, and that's big business. There's a lot of money to be made off these prisoners. So I just thought I'd point that out to you, that your senators believe that if you bring these prisoners from Guantanamo into the United States and lock them up in our prisons here, they will escape and kill you. And I think that that's a big lie. I think these people are insane. And I think insane is probably a reasonable term to apply to that. It is true that people do escape from prison, and it is true that nobody's ever escaped from Guantanamo. And our vice president, the ex-vice president, said, see, Guantanamo is a good place to put them because none of them escaped there. Well, when was the last prisoner you heard escaping from Pelican Island in California or Joliet, Illinois? Come on. I think we ought to wake up and smell coffee here. Now, while we're talking about these prisons and the prison dollars and the money that's involved in it over here, what does it cost to store a prisoner in jail? You know, there's some costs involved. And they pointed out that they'd released some of these prisoners down in Guantanamo. And 11 of them, I forgot how many they released, you know, 50 or 75 or something like that. And they said 11 of them, they know, went back to fighting in Afghanistan. They went back to Afghanistan after they got released from prison. Went back and got into the war again. They're fighting for the Taliban or whoever. Well, that's not good. We've got to concede that that isn't exactly what we had in mind. But what I couldn't figure out is why we don't call these guys, they call them enemy combatants. I don't know, we call them prisoners of war. That's what we normally do when we're involved in war. Now, the government of the United States calls this the war in Iraq and the war in Afghanistan. Well, if this is war, then there's combatants. And if there's combatants, though, then there's got to be prisoners. And if there's prisoners, aren't those guys called prisoners of war? And when you lock up these prisoners of war, aren't they locked up for the duration? And I got to thinking about that, and I said, what's wrong with locking up these prisoners in Afghanistan? You know, somewhere out near the war front for the war theater. Now, here in the United States, just to let you know how things went in World War II, we brought tens of thousands of German prisoners into the United States. We put them on ships, brought them over to the United States, and locked them up in internment camps here in the United States, in Illinois. My father-in-law was a German interpreter in one of the prison camps in Illinois for German prisoners during World War II. And they didn't lock them up in maximum security prisons, you know, like they do at Joliet, Illinois, or Hardin, Montana. They just had them in a compound. I never heard of any great problem with the German prisoners escaping and tearing up the landscape over here in the United States, or that people said, oh my God, you can't bring those prisoners over here. I never heard of it. Did you? So I just thought I'd point that out, that we have dealt with prisoners of war in the past, brought them here to the United States, and housed them here until the war was over, and then sent them back. And it would seem like to me that we could probably do the same thing with those Afghanis and those Iraqi prisoners. And if worse come to worse and push came to shove, couldn't we build a prison over there in Afghanistan and house them over there? And that's what they used to do during World War II. You know, they'd take those prisoners and they'd move them off the battlefront someplace and build a prison over here, prison camp or something like that. You know, the Russians had prison camps. And they didn't move their prisoners off to Guantanamo. Germans had prison camps. They didn't move them off to Guantanamo. They were able to take care of them right there locally. So I just thought I'd point that out to you, that the senators here in the United States, not in my state, they're telling you. Now, back in ancient times, there were no prisons in Israel. So I point that out. You look in the Bible, I was trying to find how does God deal with prisoners, you know, and the penal system. So I was looking it up in the scripture to find out, well, what does God do when you have somebody that you need to lock up? Maybe someplace in the Bible. I saw that there was a guy named Joseph. He was locked up in a prison one time, in a dungeon, they called him. That was in Egypt. And so here's Joseph. He's locked up in a prison. I saw the Apostle Paul. He was locked up in a prison, and more than once. But these were Roman prisons. So the Romans and the Egyptians had prisons. And the Apostle Peter got locked up in prison one time. He was in jail, and I noticed that was another Roman prison. So there are prisons mentioned in the Bible, but here's the funny part. It wasn't the Israelites that had prisons. They had a different system. It was the pagan nations around them that had these prisons and were locking people up in them. So my question was, well, how did Moses, you know, when he brought the Ten Commandments down off the mountain, I mean, they had laws that represented and showed the people how to deal with inheritance, marriage, divorce. Well, what kind of laws did they have for dealing with crime? How did they handle that? Well, they had a real neat system for dealing with capital crimes, of which there were 24. So there were 24 capital felonies. You know, things like adultery, murder, witchcraft. See, Sabbath breaking. These were capital felonies, and as a consequence of that, they took these people out and stoned them to death. Now, today, here in the United States, we have a number of states that have banned capital punishment because it's too cruel and extreme. So I wanted to point out that the God of the Bible is cruel and extreme. And he's not very kind and he's not very gentle, which is why I thought I'd bring that to your attention. But it has a collateral side effect, and that is, if you have a murderer or a child molester or somebody, you know, that is so deviant from society that we have to lock him up, it's cheaper to kill him than it is to lock him up. Did you know that? Now, here in the United States, it costs on average $3 million for every one of these capital felons that we want to execute. But in ancient times, it didn't cost that much, and that's because they got after it and they did it right away. Now, it also takes somewhere between 11 and 21 years to get the job done. Well, back in ancient times, there was a Sabbath breaker, and they brought him forward, and they put him in ward, that is, they held him prisoner, until God could give Moses the answer to what they should do to him. And it took one day to figure out what to do with him and execute him. So it took 24 hours to convict him and execute him. You like that? That was a very short prison stay. And it didn't cost anything to store him in jail. So let me pass this on to you and show you what it costs you to store somebody in jail. I had a buddy of mine who was in the correction system in California, and I said, hey, Ed, what's it cost to store a prisoner in your jail? And he said, $32,000. This is about 20 years ago. It was $32,000. Now, at the same time in Idaho, it cost about, $14,000 at the very same time. I saw that in the Idaho Statesman, so I jotted it down. That's why I asked Ed. So at that time, it cost more than twice as much money to keep a guy in prison. So Sirhan Sirhan, the guy that shot Bobby Kennedy back in 1968, is in prison today. Last I heard, he was still alive, still in prison. Now, let's just take $32,000 a year, which is what it cost back then. Now, it's probably more than that today because of inflation and so on, but let's just take $32,000 in constant dollars. And let's go from 68 to 78 to 88 to 98 to 108. My God, the guy's been in jail for 40 years. Okay, I think I can handle this. Let's take Sirhan Sirhan, and let's go to our Sharp EL-1197G3, and plug in the number 40 years times $32,000, okay? And I push the equal key, and oh my God, it cost $1.2 million. So far, you people in California, God love you, have spent $1.280 million dollars to store this murderer in your prison system. Now, your state's broke, and you're scrambling to figure out how are we going to balance our budget and pay for all of our bills here, and you're spending $1.2 million to store this murderer in jail. Why do you store him in jail? Well, because we can't turn him loose on the streets because he'll go around killing people. Okay. So this guy has already killed somebody, and you're afraid to turn him loose because if you do, you're afraid he'll kill somebody else. So we have to take this guy off the streets. And so you locked him up in jail, but when you do that, it costs you $32,000 a year. Which is that a day? Let's take $32,000 just for funsies here. $32,000, divide that by 365 days. It costs $87.67 a day to give this guy room and board. Now, most of you people listening to my voice right this minute are not spending $87.67 a day to support your families with board and room. It costs more money to store this one prisoner in prison than the average family in America spends on room and board for their own family. Huh? What do you make of that? So it costs, it's an expense to store these people in prison. People who are never going to be released back into society because they cannot be rehabilitated because they have been deemed by the courts to be so dangerous that they need to be locked up forever. But we can't kill them. It's okay for them to go out and kill somebody, but it's not okay to kill them. And that's where I'm having a problem. I can't understand why it is that a murderer can kill somebody, but we can't kill the murderer. Now, this cruel and unusual God of the Bible, the God that's not very compassionate, he came up with a solution to murder, and he said, murderers should be put to death. In fact, he mentioned that more than once, several times. He said, these murderers should be put to death. And I suspect that he had something in mind like the cost of storing them, because there's no provision in the Ten Commandment model for storing people in jail. None. None. Zero. Zilch. If you can find it, let me know. Would you send me a letter and tell me, hey, here's the Israelite prison at El Gedi or something like that, you know, where they were spending $32,000 a year storing people in jail because they were murderers and they couldn't turn them loose on the streets. Let me cogitate on that for a while. Now, Joseph, Paul, and Peter are mentioned in the Bible as being in foreign and alien jails, but you don't see that, you don't find that among the Israelites. So if you look through Scripture, the Israelites had a different system. So for 24 categories of crime, they just put those people to death, and it saved them $32,000 a year, $87 a day, $1.28 million every 40 years. I mean, they saved that. Now, I don't know how many prisoners you guys out there in California have locked up in your jails, and you're spending this $87 a day on, but it would seem like to me to make more sense to take them out and kill them, since how you can't turn them loose ever again anyway, and then let God deal with them in the resurrection, you know, assuming that there is a resurrection and he didn't evolve from green algae. And then you people would have an extra $87 a day that you could spend on schools and teachers and other nonsense that you deem to be more important. Evidently, you people in California believe that storing prisoners in jail and spending $87 a day is more important than balancing your budget or educating your children or providing yourselves with health care, evidently, because your prisons are full and your government's bankrupt. So it would seem like to me that if you're bankrupt, you know, that is, you don't have enough money to pay for all the things you'd like to pay for, that you need to economize. And it would seem like to me that economy would start with, well, what can we live without? And it would seem like to me that we could live without murderers, couldn't we? I think that we could live longer without murderers than we could education and health care. I mean, that's just a thought. I thought I'd throw it out there for you to consider. But in California, you are storing your murderers and spending $87 a day on them. Now, at some point in time when you're economizing, instead of closing your schools and hospitals, why don't you close some of your prisons and kill some of those jerks out there and save yourself some money and a lot of grief. Now, of course, killing those guys is going to produce some unemployment, because without prisoners in jail, what are the guards going to do? So now the guards are out there unemployed, marauding around on the streets, invading the pool halls. What are they going to do? Draw unemployment insurance? I don't know. I'll leave it up to you to figure that one out. I just thought I'd throw out the question to you. Now, here's another part of the story over here. Maybe I've heard this before, but listen to this. I had a guy in jail one time. I was in jail, and this prisoner came through. His name was Joe. And Joe, he was from California. He was a student in California. He moved up to Boise to go to college. And he was a little short of money one day in the auditorium, and he saw this lady's purse sitting on a chair. So he runs over and he grabs this lady's purse and splits and runs with it. The purse has $350 in it. Joe gets caught, and he's prosecuted for having stolen this $350. Now, in Idaho, $150 is a felony. 150, $150 is a felony. So now that they caught Joe, they prosecuted him and convicted him and sentenced him to 5 years indeterminate in the state pen. 5 years. Now, remember, it only costs $14,000 a year to keep a prisoner in jail there. So Joe had served 1.5 years. So he's cost us $21,000 at this point in time. $21,000. I'm going to write that down right here. That's for his 18 months. Now, he's going into the court. He was in the Ada County Jail, cell block D, where I happen to be housed at the moment. And so, as is my custom when I'm in jail, I conducted an interview. I like to interview prisoners so that later on I can report back to you what I found in jail. See, and if it wasn't for me being in cell block D that day, you people would never hear this story. You would never know this. So pay attention now. I sacrificed for you. So while I'm in cell block D, I'm interviewing Joe, and I said, "Hey, Joe, how come you're in here?" And he said, "Well, because I stole this lady's purse." "How much money was in the purse, Joe?" "It's just $350. "And so over $350, they've sentenced you now to 5 years in prison." I said, "Yeah." He said, "It costs $14,000 a year now to store you in the state pen, and you've been there for a year and a half, so we've spent $21,000. All right, now, for you children out there, children, get your pencils out and let's count this up. The first 18 months has now cost us $21,000. So I'm going to plug that into the Texas Instruments, the EL1197G3. Got that? And I'm going to divide that by $350. We have already spent in the first 18 months 60 times more than this guy stole. 60 times. Now picture this. This guy goes out and rips off $350. And you and I, the taxpayers, get a bill for 60 times that much just to store him out there in the prison. Now, let me ask you this. Did you really want to spend 60 times more than this jerk stole to feed him and clothe him and house him out here in a warehouse? It gets better, though. Listen to this. While Joe is in the prison out here, he's going to be released. And when they release him, he's going to go on parole, and it's going to cost $14 a day. $14 a day is what the... No, excuse me. Yep, that's right. That's $14 a day to keep him on parole. Now, once a month, he has to come in and report to some guy called the parole officer. I don't know why it costs $14 a day to keep a guy on parole. After all, he's out on the streets. He's in the pool halls. He's out robbing and selling drugs and doing, you know, he's supporting himself. You know, whatever criminals do when they get out of prison, he's going to be doing that. Why it costs $14, I don't know, but I'm just reporting to you what the state of Idaho Department of Corrections reported, $14 a day. So let's put that in here, $14. Now, the guy's going to be out for 3.5 years. So let's go. 365 divided by 2 is, this says 365 divided by 2 is 182 days. So we got 182 days. So let's go to that 182. And then we got 365 and 365 and 365. That's 1,277 days times $14. It's going to cost us another $17,878. Let's just round that off to $18,000. All right, so we got $21,000 and $18,000. That's 8 and 1 is 9. That's $39,000. The incarceration of Joe, the ripoff man here, is $39,000. How much did he steal? $350. By God, we want justice, don't we? I mean, we're not going to rest until we have justice. I asked Joe, I said, of the $350 that you stole, did the lady you stole it from get her $350 back? Hell no, he spent that penny's rent. So he spent her money. I said, you stole her purse. Did she get her purse back? No, I threw her purse in a garbage bin. So she never got her credit cards back and her pictures of her grandchildren and all the mementos and all you ladies carry around in those purses, you know, that you carry around. She didn't get her purse back. She didn't get her money back. She didn't get her credit cards back. This lady gets absolutely nothing, but she says, by God, I got to have justice, and goes down and makes a police report. The cops go out, catch this guy. He stole more than $150, so it's a felony. We lock him up in jail. It's going to cost us $39,000 to get justice. How much did he steal? $350. So how much does it cost us in addition to that? Well, let's go $39,000. Let's divide that by 350. It costs us 111 times more than he stole to get justice. Now get this. At the time I conducted this interview, this guy could have been sent to the Harvard Law School for $36,000. Boys and girls, wait a minute here. Hang on a second. Now, this is about 25 or 30 years ago. This is when I was in Boise, Idaho. This is about 1982 or 3. See, about 1983, I think. In 1983, you could have sent this guy to the Harvard Law School and made a real criminal out of it. I mean, we could have given this guy a law degree, for crying out loud, made him a lawyer, put him out on the streets, and we'd have a real shark. Now we just have a wannabe criminal who's out on the street selling drugs to your kids, stealing $350, which cost us 111 times more than he stole, and for $3,000 less, we could have sent him to the Harvard Law School, for crying out loud. What do you think of that? Huh? Does that make sense? I'm just reporting what's going on out there. I didn't think it made any sense either, but I thought I'd report it to you so you could see. But it gets better. You know, it gets better. $39,000 isn't the total cost. I said, when you got caught, did they appoint the public defender for you? Oh, yeah, public defender. And did they put you through trial? Yeah, we had a four-day trial. They had a four-day trial. They brought in witnesses and evidence and testimony for 4 days. They had jurors sitting there while this guy pleads not guilty to something that he got caught with. And so 4 days. Well, you know, I talked to Judge Woods one day, and I said, hey, Judge, what does it cost to do a one-day jury trial? Or better yet, was Judge Woods asked me, what's it cost for a one-day jury trial in the traffic court? And he said, $1,200 a day. $1,200 to pay the judge, the prosecutors, and all these guys, you know, the jurors and so on. Well, it's a four-day trial. 1224, that's $4,800. It costs $4,800. It costs $5,000 your kids to convict this jerk. Here's $39,000. Just add $5,000 to the 9, 10, 11, 12. That's 14. It's $44,000. Hey, wake up out there. We spent $44,000 to convict, lock this guy up, put him on parole for 5 years because he stole $350. Listen, the smartest thing that lady could have done would be to give the guy another $350 and say, get the hell out of here and get lost. Buy him a plane ticket back to California and get him the hell out of here. It would have cost us $700, but it would have saved us. It would have saved us more than $40,000. Can you imagine this kind of insanity going on in the United States? That's why I tell you, for the rest of you people around the world, we Americans have just gone totally crazy here. We can't count. We can't read. We can't think. And we have to have justice. And we're locking people up like Sirhan Sirhan, who is a murderer, so damn dangerous that we can't turn him loose, but we can't kill him. Our government's bankrupt, but we got to keep spending the millions of dollars to lock these jerks up and close our hospitals and schools. God, we can't close our jails. And then our senators are telling us, oh, my God, it's going to cost $84 million to close Guantanamo. And we can't house these guys here in the United States because we're afraid they'll escape. Huh? My God, I tell you, it isn't the world that's gone mad. It's the United States of America that's gone mad. I think some of the rest of you people out there in the world still have some sanity left. Hey, listen, I'm a little over time. I've got to give you a reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review, and we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. Now, if you'd like more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from a scriptural perspective. Now, it's 8 schools in all. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact desk, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, has a radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School and asking for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. 67. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give out don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing will necessarily reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour and editorial review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans in their viewpoints. May not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine. They're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about another popular lie and locking people up in prison over here so that we can get justice is one of those popular lies. We love it. It's just like public school. I mean, God, we love public school. And while we're talking about public school, which I talked about here the other day, there's another little facet that goes with this homeschool, public school thing that perhaps you had never heard before. There's a book written by a guy named Zach Montgomery. So if you write that number down, Zach Montgomery wrote a book called Poison Drops in the Federal Senate. Poison Drops in the Federal Senate. And it's the school question from a parental non-sectarian standpoint. The question arises, which are the better models for educating children, homeschool or public school? Now, here in the United States, in the early days, you know, between colonial times and about 1900, in round numbers, we used the homeschool modality or method of teaching our children. But starting in 1838 in Massachusetts, that's the spot where this cancer got started, was in Massachusetts, and the year it got started was 1838. We began a public school program. And it got started up in the northern states. This public school idea came from the north, not from the south. And from 1850 to 1880, in that 30-year period, the northern states, the New England states, and, you know, New York and Pennsylvania and Ohio and Illinois and so on, all these states, they adopted the public school theory of education, that we should collect tax dollars, and then we should send children to institutions where we had professional teachers to teach and train them. Now, the southern states, that is Virginia and North and South Carolina and Georgia and so on, you know, Texas and Tennessee, those people down there in the south, this is from 1850 now to 1880. This is before the Civil War by 10 years, during the Civil War, and then after the Civil War by 15 years. In that 30-year period of time, the Census Department keeps track of a lot of figures, a lot of statistics that go on, like the criminal rate, you know, the rate of crime in the country was being kept track of by the Census Department, just like they do today. You know, they're doing the same thing now. And so the question arose, well, does public school cause crime? Now, that's a wild, off-the-wall concept, isn't it? Let's think about this for a minute. Now, we've got public school here in the United States, and we have a lot of crime. And so the question arises, well, when you take a look at crime versus public school, in the years before we had public school and we were educating our children at home, turning out a lot of dummies because, you know, we needed public school to turn out, you know, brighter and smarter kids. Why, what happens to the crime rate? Well, Zach Montgomery took a look at New York. In fact, he took a look at all the states, but I'm just going to sort out New York, Ohio, and Illinois for you. And here's what happened. In New York, from 1850 to 1880, the crime rate went up by 500% when they adopted public school. Isn't that special? And then Ohio, when they adopted public school in that 30-year period, their crime rate went up from by 10 to 1, 10 times. And in Illinois, they had the best record. Illinois, their crime rate only went up 4 times. Isn't that special? Let me read you the articles here. Just a paragraph each. Get your pen and paper out here if you can follow the numbers. In 1850, the state of New York had a native-born population of 2.5 million. She then had in her schools about 700,000 students at an annual cost of $2.5 million, or $3.34 per student. At that time, her native-born criminals numbered 649. So in 1850, in New York State, they had about 650 criminals, or one native-born criminal to every 3,754 native inhabitants. But with the laudable purpose of lessening the tendency of her people to commit crime, the state government went on, year by year, increasing the burdens of taxation for public school purposes until in 1880, her receipts for the education of a million children were $11 million, being $11 for every pupil that entered her schools at any time during the year. And the result was that with a native white population of 3.8 million, they had 5,000 native white criminals, being 1 to every 741 people instead of 1 to every 3,754 as it was in 1850. So that is to say, having increased her expenditures for anti-parental and godless schools a little more than 300% in order to decrease crime, the state was rewarded by an increase in crime to the tune of 500%. You ever heard a story like that before? Hey, welcome to the club. I hadn't either until I read Zach's book. Now, it gets better than that, though. It's better. In Ohio, the number was 10 to 1. Here's the paragraph on Ohio between 1850 and 1880. In 1850, Ohio had a native population of 1.7 million and was expending $502,000 on pupils. Excuse me, on 502,000 pupils, they were spending $1 million, or about $2 per student. You got a million kids, got a half a million kids spending $1 million, $2 a kid. And at that time, she had about 102 native-born criminals. I mean, here's the whole state of Ohio, 1850, and they got 102 criminals locked up total. So now we've got to increase our public school expenditures here. But in 1880, she was receiving from the people $11 million for the public school education of 750,000 students, being $14.72 per pupil. And out of a native white population of 2.7 million, she had 1,674 criminals, being 1 to every 1,626 in place of the 1 out of every 17,000 in 1850. In other words, while Ohio was increasing her expenditures upwards of sevenfold in order to check crime, her criminals increased tenfold. Got 10 times more criminals. Now, we've noticed that. Now, watch this. Remember, I reported to you here a couple days ago, and I said, look, the more money we spend on public education, the dumber the children become. You take a look at the inner city public schools. We spend $14,000 per kid. They score at the 28th percentile. We spend $550 per kid in homeschool, and he scores at the 86th percentile. When you look back historically at how we've been expending money, we find that every time we expend more money on public education, we get poorer and poorer grade levels or poorer and poorer outputs from the students. So the conclusion is inescapable. If you want to dumb your kids down, spend more money on public school. That's the way life is. Now, down in the southern states, they were doing just exactly the opposite. They didn't expend this money on public school. They let the parents educate their children at home. They used the homeschool model, and their crime rates between 1850 and 1880 stayed static. They didn't have any more criminals to speak of. With higher populations, they had more criminals. But the rate of criminality as a percentage of the population was the same. Homeschool has no school shootings. Name the last, hey, come on, wake up here. When was the last school shooting you had in homeschool? When was the last school shooting you had in a Catholic or parochial school? Hey, these school shootings, they all occur in public school. So if you want to know where crime is located in America, it's located in the public schools, and that's where they teach it. Now, there's a corollary to this, and it's called the Yoder, a guy by the name of Jonas Yoder. And I think he was up in Ohio, if I remember right. Amish guy. Now, the Amish are peculiar people. I mean, they're really weirdos. They farm the land, and they ride around in horses and buggies, and they dress in funny clothes. And because they're real weirdos, people like you and I, you know, the normal people in society, don't have anything to do with them. Well, it's kind of reciprocal, because those people don't have anything to do with us either. I mean, you don't see the average Amish guy, you know, down at the local pool hall, you know, shooting a couple of rounds and drinking a Bud Light. You know, that isn't what you're likely to see over in Seymour, Missouri. But in Seymour, we got a pool hall, and we got some Bud Light there. I mean, you know, it's available in case the Amish ever, you know, get thirsty or decide they want a little entertainment. You know, it's there. But the Amish people don't do that for whatever reason. Now, they're kind of religious folk. You know, they go to church, and they send their children to their own schools. Now, they do have Amish schools manned by Amish teachers, and they educate the children to the eighth grade, but they don't send them to high school and college. You don't find any Amish kids going to MIT and becoming astronauts and blasting off to the moon. In all of history here in the United States, you don't find a single Amish man getting a Nobel Prize. I mean, these Amish people are really out of it. Now, the state of Wisconsin, oh, it wasn't Ohio, I'll take that back, it was Wisconsin. The state of Wisconsin took a look at this guy, Jonas Yoder, and they said, hey, jerk, you got to educate your kid until he's in the 10th grade, because otherwise he's going to end up being a ward of the state. And so Yoder, being an Amish guy, jerked his kid out of school in the 8th grade, and they prosecuted him. Well, Yoder took this case clear to the U.S. Supreme Court. And while the case was being heard in the Supreme Court, the state of Wisconsin said the reason that we want to educate these Amish children in the public schools until at least 16 is so that they will be better assimilated into society. Because if they're not, they'll end up in prison, or end up on the welfare rolls, or end up in an insane asylum. So the justices on the court started asking some questions, and they said, well, maybe that's got some merit. So the Supreme Court asked this question of the Wisconsin Attorney General. They said, okay, we hear you. So tell us, how many Amish people do you have locked up in the prisons of Wisconsin? And so they went out and they looked, and they went through the prisons of Wisconsin, and they searched every jail. And you know what? They couldn't find one single Amish person locked up in the jails and prisons in Wisconsin. Not one! God, you'd have thought there'd have been at least one or two, you know, just to kind of keep a representation, you know, so they're not discriminated against. But no, couldn't find one. So then the court asked this question, well, of all the people you got locked up in the prisons of Wisconsin, how many of them went to public school? And you know what? Every single prisoner locked up in Wisconsin had been to public school. Everyone, without an exception. So then the court came back and said, well, look, tell us how many Amish people you have locked up. How many of these Amish people are locked up in your insane asylums? So they went through the insane asylums. They went through all the mental hospitals. And guess what? They couldn't find one single Amish guy, one single Amish girl, one single Amish mother, father, aunt, uncle. No Amish people locked up in the mental institutions of Wisconsin. But they did have some institutions, and they did have some mental patients. And so they took a survey. And guess what? How many of those mental patients locked up in Wisconsin had attended public school? And guess what? Guess what? Every single one of them had been to public school, without exception. Isn't that special? Thought you'd like that. Here's the kicker. Get your pen and paper out here, Sally. Next question was, well, we got to educate these people so that they can get jobs out here, jobs, so that we can keep them off the welfare roll. So they looked all over Wisconsin. I said, okay, here it is. How many of these people in Wisconsin, how many of these Amish people in Wisconsin are on the welfare rolls? They searched the welfare rolls, and guess what? They couldn't find one. Not 1%, not 2%, or 5%. No, they couldn't find a single Amish person on welfare in the entire state of Wisconsin. Not one. So then they asked the corollary, you know, they said, well, hey, Of all the people that are on welfare here in Wisconsin, how many of them went to public school? All right, you probably know the answer. You're going to figure this out, ain't you, Sally? Yep, you got it. Every single one of them. So here's what we find out. In Wisconsin, everybody in the state who's been to public school, and you'll find out that every single person that's on welfare in prison or mental hospitals has been to public school. The only exception to that is the Amish. They're the only ones that don't go to public school, and guess what? They're the only ones that don't have a single representative in the prisons on welfare and the mental hospitals, which vindicates what Zach is telling, because Zach Montgomery also took a look at the welfare or the poverty rolls and the insane and the suicides and the incarceration rates from 1850 to 1880, and guess what? The people that were homeschooled were practically non-existent, and the ones that had gone to public school were the problems. Now, the Supreme Court came back and said, hey, listen here. If the objective of the state of Wisconsin is to keep the people of Wisconsin out of the prisons, off the welfare rolls, and out of the mental hospitals, they should go to the Amish and find out what the hell the Amish are doing, because the Amish have already accomplished that goal. Now, how do you like that? Now, I ain't here pushing the Amish. I ain't here pushing religion on you. Didn't tell you to give your heart to Jesus, no. Give your money to me. And I just wanted to point out some facts to you. Public school does not make people smart. It makes them dumb. Public school doesn't prevent crime. It causes and creates crime. Public school doesn't alleviate the welfare rolls. It causes the welfare rolls. Public school doesn't alleviate insanity. It's the cause of it. How do you like that? I know it's kind of a wild new idea, but that's what the facts tell us. Got it right from the Department of Education. And if you can't believe your government, who can you believe? I am about out of time again, so I got to give you a final reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hey, time's up. I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.